Tres Cholos, that's Grito Serpentino. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, also freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. And this, of course, is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Today is December 1st, 2005, first show of the last month of the year. And you can be on the air if you want. If you've got stuff you want to talk about, locally we're concerned about civil rights and other political issues down here in the Cruz, you can give a call. The number is 831-427-3772, 831-427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz, or Freak Radio Santa Cruz, as we're sometimes called. You can also send a check. Hey, make it big, make it juicy, or some advice, or an application, or a public service announcement you want to make to the voicemail line. At least you can find out more information by calling there. And the voicemail line is 427-4523, 427-4523. You can also go online and get more information about Free Radio there, www.freakradio.org. And indeed, if you want to be a broadcaster or a contributor or a supporter to Freak Radio, you can get an application form there. You can fill it out, and you can attempt to pass the strict standards of our militant Stalinist board. I'm sorry, of our free-thinking, free radio board. And you actually probably will get a show. We're pretty liberal. Just don't cross the line, buddy. Anyway, so that's something you can do if you're interested in free radio. You can also mail a check, hey, the slow, traditional, ancient way, to Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. If you want to catch me off air because there's some comments that you wish to make to me that you are perhaps afraid of being sued for on the air, you can give me a call on the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, civil rights group for poor folks and folks on the streets and folks who are concerned about civil rights issues around that. And the number is 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You can also jump on the Pages in Color chat room, where apparently only I am situated at the moment. That's at pagesincolor.com, all one word, pagesincolor.com. And you can not only chatter at me, and I will attempt to read your emails, possibly, not your emails, your chat room dialogue, possibly half an hour to an hour late, as if my past record is any guide. But actually, I'm going to try to keep a closer eye on the chat room. I promise, and see what I can do with that. A couple of announcements tonight. Tonight at 6:15, that's about 10 minutes or less, hope to get a call from Reva Entin, who has been fighting to restore democracy to KPFA, as she conceives it, and as I tend to agree with her analysis, although I've got to admit I haven't had her opponents on the show or talked to them directly. I have read a bit of their chatter on the, San Francisco Indie Media, which I'm kind of looking for at the moment here and wondering where it might be. Not sure if I can find it or not. But she will be talking with us about Bill Mandel, who's a octogenarian lefty who was bumped off KPFA a decade ago, got on again this spring through massive protest at KPFA, which, by the way, is one of four or five radio stations from the Pacifica Foundation who began what's called listener-sponsored FM radio way back in 1949 in Berkeley, spread to Los Angeles, New York City, I think Austin, Texas, or perhaps Houston, Texas, and other places, but it's not as widespread or fast movement as free radio, of course. Free radio is, of course, considerably cheaper for us, although not riskier, because we face, as you may remember from a year ago, the long claw of the FCC, which can come in at any time and tear us away, crunch the station, seize the equipment, jail the participants, and most important, deprive the community of not only my fine voice, but the voice of dozens, perhaps hundreds of other people that you've heard in the last week that you're not going to hear anywhere else. So keep that in mind as you listen tonight, and let that be a lesson to you, or hopefully let that be an encouragement to be supportive, to be alert. We need more than one free radio station in town. It would be nice if somebody started a second one. It's not that expensive. So let's get going, all you radio people. Come on, all you libertarians who feel that free radio is cracking down on libertarian thought, isn't a free speech site, and that sort of thing. Start your own station, and let's get some more diversity in the area. And we don't just need free radio and KSCO and, the kitties on the hill at KZSE. We need lots of radio stations. Let 1,000 radio stations bloom, or at least one additional free radio station here in Santa Cruz. Wouldn't that be nice? Okay, well, a couple things here. If I'm able to operate this computer, I'm having a few problems here, but I'm going to work on it. Tonight at the Attic, there's a group playing, which I'm going to mention because I really enjoyed them on the streets and because I've interviewed them and because they are kind of a subject matter around the struggle to get past the downtown ordinances, the Emily Riley, Ed Porter, Mike Rodkin, the city council laws that have essentially given the police a blank check to cite people for almost anything they do as a musician on the street in most places if they have a display device out, if they stay for more than an hour. And anyway, they're a great group. I'm going to play a little of them actually in a moment. They are, however, playing at the Attic, which is a second-story salad eatery public space. It's actually a private space, but there's a lot of events that happen there. Whether, you know, musicians play there, folks talk there. I think plays are put on there. Pretty cool place. On the second floor, it's right across from the Metro Center. And you might want to check that out at 7 o'clock tonight. Also, 7 o'clock tonight, for those who have vehicles or perhaps flippers, and you can swim to Watsonville, our own representative, Sam, get out of the U.S., U.S. get out of Iraq, but let's not hurry about it, Far is meeting at the YWCA in Watsonville at 304 East Beach Street. Again, at the YWCA, 304 East Beach Street, having a town hall meeting. And you might want to go and present your concerns to him and see how seriously he takes you. I'd like to hear from folks out there whether they've had some positive response from Far on any meaningful issues. I found him impervious to concerns about homeless civil rights, police misconduct. Oh, dear. Looks like we're having some problems in the studio here. I'm hearing all kinds of things here. I'm going to put on a tape, I hope. The lights just went out here. And hopefully we're going to be able to continue. Lights are on again in the studio. Looks like power problems, this being a storm and all. So hopefully we're still broadcasting. You might want to call in if you're experiencing an interruption. 427-3772 is the number. And hopefully this won't interfere with Reva Entine's call. That should be coming in shortly. We should hope to hear from that. I'm also going to be playing today some tape from the deposition of former council member, I should say council member and former mayor, Tim Fitzmaurice, who initiated an arrest of me at city council way back in 2002 for making a Nazi salute. Actually, it was a brief gesture that protested Mayor Crone's premature closing of oral communications on a peace activist and, in essence, threatening her with arrest for even daring to ask to speak at the microphone in what would have been the normal oral communications time had Crone provided the standard amount of time and had he, in fact, kept what was the traditional practice of mayors at that time. This was on March 12, 2002. And my response was sort of off to the side. I kind of raised my right arm in a great, another fascist move by the city council, turned to talk to Susan, and suddenly I was confronted by Fitzmaurice, who told me that I was not allowed to make such a gesture and I had to leave the chambers. That is to say, I had to surrender my Brown Act right to be at a public meeting because he found a gesture I made critical of the city council, something he didn't want in the room, and so he had the right to remove my civil right to be at a public meeting, which I think, of course, is preposterous and also dangerous. But the city council does this kind of regularly, and that became the basis of a lawsuit. I was removed. I was arrested. I was taken to jail and held for a number of hours. They weren't violent. They weren't abusive. But it was humiliating. It was chilling, both to me and other people. It caused emotional distress. You may hear me on the radio, you know, boldly going on and criticizing the city council. But once you've been arrested there, you wonder the next time you walk in, you are apprehensive the next time, the next occasion you are going in there, what they're going to do when they see you. And it impacts your speech. It impacts how you talk. No matter how hard you try, you have to really generate a lot of emotional energy, courage, I don't know what you call it, to go about the business of confronting the city council, calling them on their bullshit, calling them on their abuses, calling them on their omissions. If you're a friend of the city council, you like what they do, well, there's no problem, you know. I mean, it's everything is rosy. But if you're not, and there lies the problem, with this city council, they have become, and this by this city council, I mean the city council in Santa Cruz, which has had changing membership, but a lot of the star figures remain the same. Mike Rodkin, Cynthia Matthews, for example, is mayor again after having been mayor before in 1997. Scott Kennedy's gone, but I'm afraid he may come up like a return like a bad penny in 2006. Fitzmaurice, of course, is on his second term. People tend to keep showing up here, the politicians who like that city council office. And it's there is a practice at city council, I believe, of repression of activists, which I'm attempting to show in this lawsuit, and I attempted to show it by getting information from taking the depositions of Fitzmaurice, former Mayor Kennedy, and former Mayor Crone under oath. And I'm going to be playing some of those depositions on the air. I was surprised to learn that it's perfectly legal to do so, that they are public documents, and I'm going to try to present them. A lot of it is pretty boring. I don't remember, I don't recall, that sort of thing. But some of it isn't. And unfortunately, I haven't done a lot of selection because the depositions just ended yesterday. I am still room hunting, looking for a room. All you people out there who might have a room for rent, let me know. Give a call to 423-HUFF, please. I'm looking for a room. But I'm going to try to play more of this tape on Sunday when I come back. The show returns, of course, 9:30 on Sunday morning. For those of you who don't know, 9:30 to 1 on Sunday mornings. We're also archived at huffsantacruz.org in case you want to listen to a show you've heard before. I see my producer has joined the Pages in Color dialogue. I should say chat room dialogue. Thank you for coming on there, Woman of Steel. And you can join the Pages in Color dialogue, too. Pagesincolor.com. I will keep an eye on it, particularly if you have questions for Reva Entin, because I believe she may be calling in on the listener line rather than on the guest line, because that's probably what's going to happen. So if you've got questions for her, you can do it that way. Go to Pages in Color, jump on the chat room, print them out there, and I will present them to her. And while we're waiting for that call, a little tape from the street, and I will be back.
And we're down on the mall listening to that fine group of compañeros. Mañana, mi chanto. That wild, hip group coming straight from some foreign country. I don't know what, down here in front of O'Neill's. It's, goodness, Wednesday evening. Hey! They're playing with a permit and amplified sound, unashamed, unafraid, unrehearsed, probably rather rehearsed. And it's about 10 to 6 on Wednesday afternoon, November 30th. They're missing the lead trombone here, or is it trumpet? But look, no, wait, he's coming back. He's here. How's it going?
Fine, fine.
And again, we're talking to the infamous...
To Mañana Me Chanto, or what? To Marco from Mañana Me Chanto.
We've been, and can you just, and you have a website people can go to?
Well, you could go to the Santa Cruz site, gotlocalmusic.com, and look for Mañana Me Chanto, and you can find, like, our music download. And...
Or you can listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz and hear your music.
Oh, somebody put it on there?
Well, you gave me one of your discs, or one of you did.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I take it, have you been moved along here every hour? What's been happening?
Oh, well, we just got harassed, like before, that we weren't our 14 feet enough away from the entrance of a store, who actually came the owner out to buy a CD because she loved how we played. So it's like, you know, the probably policemen are so much under pressure they can't really handle the situation.
We have a permit
anymore
to play, correct?
Yeah, we do have.
Well,
but,
you have a permit to play. It doesn't say within 14 feet one way or the other.
Yeah,
it just says move along every hour.
Yeah, that's like, there is like... It's just too complicated. There's too many rules, and basically they forgot why they made the rules for it.
You're obviously a problem case. I can talk to you no further. Thank you again. We've been talking with...
Marco.
Thank you, Marco. Okay, well, it's about 6:25 on the streets with that vet among vets.
The vet among vets, yes.
What is your name, sir?
My name is... Captain America.
And Captain America, I know that Tim Bratton, who manages the Vets building, if I'm not mistaken, has received some flack from some people interviewed on the street. You, on the other end, have a different view?
Yes, I have a different view. Tim brings money into the vets hall. A certain amount of money is needed for its operation. That's one thing to keep in mind. And also on his watch, and since he's taken over as his manager, in a lot of people's minds, things have improved in the vets at the Vets Hall building.
What kind of improvements would this be?
Generally, opening it up to the community, holding different types of classes and cultural events, and this generates a revenue stream. And they're kind of, in a sense, they're strapped. They're strapped for cash, and this is an important thing to remember. So I'd give Tim good marks on that account. And then I think it's the nature of the type of classes he tends to bring in, like yoga classes, which I think is a good idea.
And there's a yogi from way back.
Right, I'm a yogi from way back, and there's some people I think that don't like yoga classes and what they and what they represent, but I think it's he's got unfairly put in. You know, there's two sides to every story. I think sometimes his personality is not all that it should be, and he's impatient and under stress. But if the issue is, I understand it, I would give him good marks for bringing money into the Vets Hall building that's needed, and I like the idea of bringing a lot of yoga classes
now,
in.
What about these two recent restraining orders against Jim Purcell and I guess another individual, Vets, from being at the Vets building?
I don't know anything about that.
And how about the removal of benches from outside the Vets Hall that haven't been returned yet?
Well, I don't know anything about that either.
Okay, what do you know about it?
It's easy to polarize, to follow the politics of polarization and confrontation. I am polarized in other areas and confront the politics of me, but I don't like to carry this into everything I do. And I realize, and I think there's a very definite two sides of the story issue here. I think there are people that that have good intentions in mind, that want to use the Vets Hall building for their own things, and see Tim Bratton is sort of standing in the way of realizing those goals.
But what about the claim that he's harassed the guy on the third floor with the radio?
From what I can tell, talking to the board of the several members of the board of directors, they don't believe that's the case.
Okay. Thank you, Captain America.
Yeah.
So we're here.
There wouldn't have been anyone around, just me.
This is a woman with a violin talking. What is your name, madam?
Dueling Banjos.
You're DB?
I am.
I know we're here at the SAFE event, usually SAFE 96. You got a guitar, banjo, and drum. No banjo, but...
Not tonight. No, the banjo's not here. If I had brought the banjo, everybody would have gone.
But you got soup, you got a guitar, and then over across the way at the other green kiosk, there's a bunch of other musicians playing over there. So this is... You got your choice of two groups.
Yeah, it's like, really, it's like, what do you call that, stereophonic?
Maybe that kind of sexual division, is there sort of some reproduction?
I think it's pretty much divided in the sex genders.
Yeah. I better go and see what's going on over there. Do you have any comments to make on this new scene?
I say, ask Bob.
What do you think, Bob? What's going on here? I mean, new music, a new scene, different styles.
We're just split in two. I don't know why.
It's a new horizon. Instead of one, it's two, twice as much, two different groups.
We're multiplying, yeah.
We're multiplying, yeah. Thank you. it's a safe event. Number two, the second group here.
Group A or Group B? Yeah.
And then we got Uncle Mike on the Casio. We've got VC on the guitar. And we got...
Okinawa Willie doing lead here.
Okinawa, a.k.a. Uncle Larry.
This is practice time. We have light, we have songbooks, we're practicing. So and they're the main event over there.
I see. You're the second string and you're warming up.
I've just been saying around that a DJ or a drum circle on every corner, if not a drum circle, free food. And little did I know that I would come down here tonight.
You can never tell what's going to happen. And here we have the woman looking over the whole thing and holding a bowl of soup. Your name, madam?
Bibi.
Hey, Bibi, any comments on this special rehearsal group?
No, we're having a ball. We got some good homemade soup. Y'all come down. We'll leave the light on. You hear?
There you have it. It's Thomasina Baudet's. Product in process here, folks. And as you might imagine, there's been a speed up in the course of events. We're going to have to respond to that by shifting gears ourselves. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. And I'm playing you some tapes from the SAFE event yesterday as I... await a call from Reva Entine up in San Francisco / Berkeley, up somewhere in the Bay Area. And I'm not sure we're actually going to get that because she had an appointment later and she was pressed for time. So we may not actually get her. But let's listen to some more of these interviews and see where they lead.
I'm here at the the rehearsal group. We're talking with
Bibi.
Bibi, you say that on Sunday, some, shall we say, toxic brownies were handed out that made everybody sick?
There was four of us, yes. That we figured that we didn't know it was a prank until we began to wonder when we seen them grinning like Jissy Cats.
Yeah. Who gave you these brownies? What did they look like?
They look like they belong to kids around the age of USC, SC.
And what did the brownies do to cause problems?
I had chest pains, I had dizziness, I had where I was going to upchuck, and all I did was dry heave, but even though I had something in my system, I couldn't. The worst thing that happened is I was drinking water, and the water was nasty. I could not get the water down, because when the water did go down, it got hotter, and it burned. It felt like swords stabbing at my insides.
Who else had this unpleasant experience?
There was three others. One's Val, one's Gregory. I forgot who the other one is. Michael and myself.
Wow. And you're keeping your eyes open for these bad brownie givers, eh?
Well, we're not taking any more food from anybody unless we know them. We learned our lesson quite well.
Starting to rain.
I don't feel anything.
Well, it's because raindrops are falling
from the sky.
Gregarious Greg here has a further update on the exciting brownie toxicity situation.
Well, hey, you know, we were out here playing, I think it was last Sunday, some of our friends were. Anyway, some young folks pulled up on trendy little coupe or whatever, smiling, nice young folks, late teens, early 20s, blonde-haired Caucasian types, and said, hey.
Smile and still be a villain.
Yeah, and they said, hey, you like some brownies? They were very awesome-looking brownies, nice, big, thick rascal. And I said, sure, okay. Well, I didn't particularly want it for myself, but I said, okay, I'll give them to these people. But a lot of folks are very interested. So we passed them out to about four or five of us. And then, within 5 minutes of eating them, next thing you notice a funny taste in your mouth, depending on who you talk to. But what really happened was is that whatever substance was in them would turn water or the moisture in your mouth into a very sour, bitter taste. So if you drank water, it was extremely bitter. Any water. Then the next day, I guess from a couple of others that I've talked to, you definitely get a diarrhea. So I suspect it was at least
out your system.
It was at least a very cleaning substance, whatever was in it, besides the one that gave you a very bad taste in your mouth. So there were some young folks, and I guess they were having some jollies. They came by a couple times, actually, before we finally figured out what was happening and kind of checking to see what kind of reaction I guess they were going to see.
You crap your pants?
What havoc they had created. So we were just very trusting, and people bring food here and donate it all the time, so we didn't think nothing untoward about it, although they seemed very jovial and laughing.
Too jovial?
Perhaps so, laughing about things. So all I can say is that I'll be a little more cautious next time, and maybe they'll come back again. I'm hoping they will, and try it again.
Uh-huh. You'll have a few words for them, eh?
No, we'll be ready for them, boy.
Do you have any songs you've composed on that subject?
Not yet. Not yet.
We'll hope to hear from you in the future. Nacho's playing, or is it Nacho?
Come on down, let the wind sweep the ground goodbye.
UCSU student your last year in a rather unusual major. What is that again?
Anthropology.
But what specifically are you here checking out?
Well, I'm doing my senior seminar for a class called Anthropology of Sound.
Of sound.
Yeah, so I've decided to do for my final project that I wanted to look at street performers and why they're out here and, you know, different types of music that they play and if there's certain times that are better than others. I don't know. Just the whole dynamic of street performers and their life and
Life, their loves, their liberties.
Why they're doing what they're doing.
Now, have you talked to any yet?
I tried to talk to these people over there, but they seem kind of busy. So I came over here to just listen and observe, and then maybe ask them questions.
Need a street performer.
And then you kind of turn the interview around.
Of course. Well, I'm actually... Actually, we have a lot of street performers on this radio show, which, for listeners, in case you don't already know, is archived at huffsantacruz.org. So you can hear old shows there, and you can actually see some of them described verbally, so you don't have to actually listen to the whole show. But, I'm glad to see you interested in street performers. There, of course, is a series of laws downtown that criminalize a lot of street performers. In fact, most of what they're doing right here is illegal.
I was told that initially that this is kind of like a stand for street performers, this whole Wednesday night congregation that comes
It's ignored by the city police because they don't attempt to protect individual street performers in different locations. But in fact, there's a whole series of laws that criminalize most of what they're doing here, but the authorities ignore it because they use those laws to selectively go after people they don't like.
Oh, okay.
It's called the police state, you see. In the police state, the police, in essence, make the decisions rather than the citizens, and the city council essentially has given the police the power to arrest people for doing virtually, any street performers or people sitting can either be moved along or cited or arrested almost anywhere, although there are theoretically some safe spots.
Do you know if there's a different number of tickets given to street performers and people just asking for change? Are they ticketed the same, or is it...
Well, they're ticketed under different ordinances, and I don't have the stats on how many people are getting ticketed in both groups.
Just in general, have you noticed that one group gets ticketed more than the other? Is it about equal, or do you really not know?
I would appreciate your letting me know as you continue your survey what you find, because I'm concerned about eliminating the laws that impact both these groups that have nothing to do with real criminal behavior.
Right. seems like you guys play a lot of old rock, rock and roll.
That's what they do. They have old rock and old roll.
Who decides what song is going to be played? Is it just kind of somebody starts and everybody else joins in, or is it choreographed in any sort of way at all?
Good question. Let's pull aside a street performer and see him. A UCSC student, Val, I'd like you to meet
Diane. Thank you.
Who is investigating the street performance scene.
Yeah.
She has a question for you.
Okay. I've noticed you guys play a lot of, like, old kind of rock and roll. How do you decide what songs you're going to play? Is it kind of choreographed, or does somebody just start playing and then everyone else joins in? Or, I mean, I think you guys meet every Wednesday night, and is there any time outside of Wednesday night that you guys
Yes, it's not, people just kind of step up and start playing, and if you show up and you want to sing or you want to lead something or play guitar, it's like a stay and play kind of situation, and if there's something specific you want to play, we'll make room for you, otherwise just kind of come into the flow. You know, we have, there's some of us who have been here for a long time, we're just in the habit of doing certain songs, and we've learned each other's songs and that sort of thing. We've kind of, merged a certain amount of material, I guess, but there's never any decisions, all like organic. Right. So I invite everybody to come and sing and play along.
So you're playing the tambourine here. Does everybody kind of switch off on the instruments, or does everybody have their own instrument that they bring?
It's pretty much free form.
Yeah.
You can pretty much do whatever you want. I like to, when I don't know the song, I like to dance and play tambourine, but I lead songs sometimes also.
Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely do. Just step right up.
Great. So it seems like it's a pretty fluid group of people coming in and out, and different people every week, or?
Well, there's kind of a core of us who've been here for a while, but there's no, like, commitments or anything like that. It's not like, we need, like, certain people to do certain songs or anything like that.
How did you initially find out about this group?
A friend of mine told me about my friend Michael, who was over there last time I looked. I don't see him around now, and I didn't know him, and she said, and she knew that I wanted to sing peace songs, mostly peace songs on the street, and she said she knew this incredible homeless person named Michael, and he wanted to also sing, you know, kind of songs similar to the repertoire that I was doing.
Uh-huh.
And she didn't know anything else about it. She didn't say it was like a homeless activist situation, or
right.
Or she didn't mention the Society for Artistic Freedom of Expression, which is what this group started out as.
Do you feel that it hasn't necessarily moved from its core, but it's kind of adopted other kind of movements? Would you say, like, it's just anti-war and blah, blah, blah? Is it just kind of, like you said, it's just free expression in an artistic manner? Like, it's not necessarily for homelessness or for street performers, but it's just, I'm sorry, I'm just...
I can answer anytime. It was originally started as a protest against some evolving city ordinances that were oppressing and suppressing street performers and got really petty and ridiculous, and I guess a lot of people, had a lot of legal conflict on account of that, so this group was formed to promote that. I wasn't here at that time. I came in around the fifth Wednesday, I guess. But so we're here to, the suppression has died down. I think when the ordinances first came into effect, I think the police were probably pretty zealous about making sure that everybody knew what the law was, and now it seems that the performers who've been around for a while know what the ordinances are, and the police don't harass us anyway. We're violating quite a lot of ordinances being here, but they've gotten way more lenient. So, we pretty much... Right. So, as far as anti-war, we tend to all be sympathetic like that. We do have that sign that says honk if you want the U.S. out of Iraq. But, that's not a requirement. We don't really do any... It's just kind of a outlook that everybody happens to share.
Right.
You know, it's not required for membership in the group or anything like that.
Do you know how long this has been happening?
We'll be at our 100th week, the Wednesday between Christmas and New Year's.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic.
Right.
So, I've kind of walked around downtown, and I've seen a lot of street performers that don't necessarily attend here, or I don't know, or I don't really see a lot of these people on a day-to-day basis.
Many are called, but few show up, and usually actually pretty much everybody who's played on the street a lot has come and sat in with us.
Yeah.
At least once. Yeah. We also have soup. I don't know if you heard about that, but usually we have soup that's donated by Joe Schultz, of who used to own India Joe's restaurant, now has a catering company, so he's been kind enough to provide us with vegan soup. Incredible soup. The soup is free. You cannot get soup like this in a restaurant. It's like gourmet soup, and everybody can just share. It's way cool. And other people come and also share their food, you know, bagels and...
Talking with.
This is Larry Wilson. I'm the commander.
But Larry Wilson is going to have to wait, because in the studio with us as a special surprise guest is not Reva Antina San Francisco, who has not called in, bad Reva, but in fact the infamous Lisa Mulino, the Greenway distributor and vendor of medical marijuana, the only one south of Hayward and north of Santa Barbara that I've heard of. And I guess maybe there may be somebody in Fresno. Welcome to the studio, as these talk show hosts say.
It's easier to come here.
Really?
Hi, Robert.
Hi. Well, you've been open now in the Harvey West for, what, about 4 months, something like that?
10 weeks.
10 weeks, so not 4 months. That's
this week, I think, is the 10th week, so
two and a half months. And,
yeah.
And is your operation paying for itself?
So far.
Really?
Yeah, it seems to be stabilizing.
So are you making enough to retire to Tahiti?
Not at all. I haven't even paid myself yet.
Really? How many people?
I have a 9-person crew. They're getting paid.
Uh-huh.
I get paid. My bills get paid, but...
And how many people are you serving now in toto, would you estimate?
I think last time I looked a couple days ago, it was 1,300. But that's how many have registered. We still probably have about... anywhere from 70 to 90 patients a day, sometimes more. The day before Thanksgiving was pretty big.
And we're talking about people with cards, with letters. If an individual wants to be able to receive medical marijuana, what does she or he have to present?
First, they have to have a California ID and then a California physician's recommendation.
So somebody from New Jersey can't quite make the grade, eh?
Well, we've had some weird things happen where somebody's moving here. They've moved here, but they still have their New Jersey ID or whatever. And then they've got their paper ID from the California DMV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we'll take that. As long as it's a California physician's recommendation, which...
But it's not really required, though, under Proposition 215 to have a California physician. You just have to have a physician's recommendation, right?
I'm pretty sure it designates California. At least the ordinance for Santa Cruz does. It was very adamant in
so
my
So Santa
paperwork.
Cruz ordinance is stricter than the statewide ordinance.
I think it's probably the state is the same, because...
I'll just check on my
yeah,
Google
do it.
Machine.
I don't know
we'll
if
see
that's
who's
clarified.
Lying here.
No, I don't know if that's been clarified by law for California.
I don't either. I mean, I can't say. I'm looking for...
But it's California State, so I'm guessing,
Yeah. I'm. Well, anyway, this is...
A California licensed physician is probably what it states in the law. Licensed is in there, of course.
So, what percentage of the people... I think I asked Cindy, your partner on this, some of the details, and she talked to us about it, either... directly by phone, or I conveyed some information. What's the situation for low-income people? How many people have come to you who are strapped for funds and, you know, panhandling for pot, man? What's going down here with that?
Well, probably, I would say there's probably a percentage of about, it's probably 20% that we help with low income. There's a lower percentage of the homeless that we see, and I don't know if that's just because they don't acquire the card or the recommendation, although I think they can do it with the county legitimately for free or a small fee. But the homeless that we work with is about 10%, and they get compassion bags. And, you know, of course, some try to pay some money, and we most don't take it because... Quite often,
you are giving away marijuana. Hey, everybody, come on down.
Yeah, sometimes it comes out that way. But we do have to try to clarify somebody's status a little bit, because everybody will claim that status. And we had a little problem with that for a few days in our beginning, but we've worked over the bumps and figured it out.
This could be a low-income person calling from a payphone. Let's see what's cooking here. You're on the air with Lisa and Robert. Hi.
Hello. I was really curious about the free way to get free, not necessarily the pot or the marijuana, the medicine, as much as getting the approval or okay.
The recommendation?
Because from my understanding, it costs at least $100 through the doctor, and then there's also, I thought, a charge through the county to get the card itself from the county. And I'll take the answer off air because I have children that are going to probably start making lots of noise. So I'll just be listening. If you could explain a little bit about how people can get the free card, that would be awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, caller.
The county health department, I don't have the number on me, but you can actually call them and find out. They have county services for low-income and homeless to acquire their doctor, their physician's recommendation. After that, you don't really require the city, the county card. You can just have the recommendation. But I believe the county charges 25, I think it's 35 now. It used to be 25, and that's for the actual card. But the county health department can give you all the information on the doctors that you can visit for your recommendation.
Well, I've looked up the text of Proposition 215. We're in the studio with Lisa Molyneux, who's the founder and six-day-a-week worker and manager at Greenway at 144 and 140 Du Bois over in the Harvey West. According to the text of the law, there is no mention of a California physician.
Does it just say licensed physician?
It says, this is what proposition, well, it's the proposed law. And it says...
Oh, okay, SB, go ahead.
The section shall be known as the Compassionate Use Act of 1996. To ensure that seriously ill Californians have the right to obtain and use marijuana for medical purposes where that medical use is deemed appropriate and has been recommended by a physician who has determined that the person's health would benefit from the use of marijuana in the treatment of cancer, anorexia, AIDS, chronic pain, spasticity, glaucoma, arthritis, migraine, or any other illness for which marijuana provides relief.
Exactly.
To
remember that line.
Indeed. Very important.
That's an important last sentence there.
It's the escape clause. To ensure that patients and their primary caregivers obtain and use marijuana for medical purposes upon recommendation of a physician, not a California physician.
Now look up SB 420, because SB 420 defines Proposition 215.
Right. Now, SB 420, of course, is a state law, but the initiative overrules SB 420. The initiative is the constitutional amendment by the people. So in theory, if there is a difference between the two, the initiative would again, that's
but most certainly my guidelines from the city require that it be a California physician.
So the city in effect is saying that it wants to stop people flying in from New Jersey with questionable ID from using the benefits of the
well, like I said, the only time we've ran into that were people in transition that were moving or and they actually were able to provide the right documentation to still attend Greenway. So we haven't run into a situation that we haven't been able to work out yet.
Now, my producer has a couple of comments / questions wondering if you honor cards from other clubs.
We not private clubs, like the MaryMed card. We don't. That's a private club card. I can't verify it in any way.
What about San Francisco clubs?
We take all county cards.
All county cards.
And then there are some groups like the OCBC in Oakland and the Green Medicine Group, which I believe is a San Francisco facility that acts kind of like the OCBC, which you take your recommendation, they verify it, and they give you a card. And that's kind of like the county services do the same thing. So we do accept a wide variety of the cards, but if it's a particularly private club, we can't take it because they won't verify it.
What about the Norris Bathurst Spears Broadside Special Make It Up As You Go card?
Yeah, I was going to say, will you verify it when we call you?
I'll try to verify. As Dr. Norris will verify it. You're on the air with Lisa and Robert.
Hello, Robert. It's Andrea.
Hey, Andrea.
Hey, Lisa. How you doing, girlfriend?
Good. How
man,
you doing?
You know what? You are a godsend angel. You and your partner, Cindy. I'm not kidding, man. You guys... You're real important to me and
too special, nice.
And I want you to know that. Anyway, I just wanted to quickly comment. I think it was T.J. Shatter that called him. Now, my experience has been, I see Dr. Young because as far as I know, at the county clinic, Dr. Young is the only one that will write a referral for medical marijuana. But like I said before, if you go to him and he does that for you,
he will want you to agree to continue to only see him. That's the only thing. So that worked out good for me. And then after I got the referral from him, there's a phone number here to the ID, the county ID program. It's 454-3431. And you call that number, you leave your name and phone number, and they call you back. They make an appointment for you to go in. You take your recommendation over there, and then they photo ID you. Yes, it is $35, and it expires after a year. That's why I haven't gotten mine replaced, because I don't have the money for it. But anyway, that's what my experience has been.
Andrea,
I just heard door slamming.
Andrea,
so,
you had a...
Anyway, I'm going to go, and I'll talk to you later. I just wanted to put that out there for
people.
Okay,
Andrea, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Didn't get a chance to ask her that question. But
no, I'll I'll ask her next time she comes in.
another point from producer Becky, who's also written on this subject, Becky Johnson. She's pointed out that she was told by her housemate that a legal marijuana user got his plants ripped off last week, called the Santa Cruz Sheriff's, they caught the kids, and returned the pot. Now, have you heard anything more about any other instance of this or of the opposite? Anything you've heard about our police?
I've heard that the sheriff confiscated a concentrate from a patient because he didn't know what to do with it. He didn't confiscate the medicine that they had that was flower. He called around and couldn't figure out what to do with the concentrate, so he took it. But I don't know what the law defines. I think it defines the concentrate as medicine also, because some of our patients need the strength of a concentrate that actually helps their pain. So I do know of that one incident where it was confiscated.
Was she able to get her concentrate back?
I don't know that it was a he. I don't think he tried.
Was he charged with any criminal violation?
No.
Oh, so they're stealing your stuff without any kind of charge.
They only took 1 gram of concentrate. They didn't take his flowers.
I took $50 from
you. It's better than it used to be, but anyway.
Petty theft instead of grand larceny.
The only incident that I heard of that somebody was confiscated, and I think it was because of confusion.
Well, I don't know. Later on, you know, when they call, you never attempted to follow up.
They probably don't know what a concentrate is. Is the truth? Well, they must. It's Santa Cruz.
I don't. It sounds like prejudice and discriminatory behavior by some officers, at least, and failure by the sergeants to carry out due diligence in protecting the rights of the community.
Well, somebody needs to teach them, obviously.
Well, if they're getting paid,
maybe I'll do that.
All right,
at least they get some examples for them and go show them and explain it.
I want the full. We'll be there with free radio to sample the product to make sure all is well. There's a story in today's Sentinel by Nancy Pasternak. You may have seen. County health official questions research linking pot with schizophrenia.
I hadn't seen that. No.
Maybe you were just in an autistic trance at the time. It's possible. It says, in essence, Valerie Corral, who's the founder of WAM, Women and Men's Alliance for Medical Marijuana, I think quite properly attempts to dismiss and explode this paranoid myth that they like to circulate, that pot has these connections with different mental conditions and so forth.
They have to, yeah.
But what the story says is research claims broadcast on CNN, ABC, and magazines, The Nation and National Review, and in dozens of governmental and nonprofit agency websites in the past year have warned that smoking pot increases the risk of developing schizophrenia, chronic disabling brain disorder.
That explains it. Okay.
That's why I've been so crazy these last few years.
I guess me too.
Suspiciousness, delusions, and impaired memory are telltale signs of serious mental illness brought on by a war in Iraq. By the active ingredient in marijuana, according to study results quoted repeatedly on the web. Like Corral, Ramakalsa, director of the county's health services agency, is skeptical of the findings and the motives of those who promote them. Until the Bush administration, I'd never seen science used so much for political purposes. I'm troubled by the administration's comfort level with manipulation and their distortion of research studies detailed online by such organizations as the Radiological Society of North America and the government's National Institutes of Health and National Office of Drug Control Policy refer to studies conducted in Britain, Sweden, New Zealand, Japan, Italy, and several in the United States, including one from Yale University. Proportions of sampled pot smokers who eventually were diagnosed with schizophrenia vary from study to study, but conclusions about the basic relationship are similar. The findings, reads a press release from Yale, following the release of the university study in June 2004, go along with several other lines of evidence. that suggests a contribution of cannabis to the pathophysiology of schizophrenia. Calso is not impressed. You need to know what you're looking at and how the results are interpreted. Those who smoke marijuana or take other drugs need to know the actual risks involved, say both Calso and Corral. Marijuana doesn't cause schizophrenia, but many people may think it's a no-harm drug, says Calso. People who already have a serious mental illness can have a relapse by smoking pot, she says. Have you heard of any problems with marijuana distributors being sued because of medical problems that develop from smoking marijuana anywhere in this state or other states where marijuana has been legalized for medical use?
I haven't, but I have to say truly that since we opened, I haven't had time to be online and keep up with all the stuff that's happening. I usually, you know, would be on the ASA website quite often, or Cal Normal website, or one of the others, and follow up. So I don't know in the last 10 weeks if that's happened, but up till that point, I don't remember hearing of one.
Do you, tell us a little bit about what it's like running this distribution center, which, as we've mentioned before, the only one, not only the only one in Santa Cruz, and really the only one in Santa Cruz County. I guess there's Medi-Chem and Anita Henry's MedX.
Well, Medi-Chem is a physician's recommendation facility, and they don't distribute.
Right, and Anita Henry's is very small and
right.
Personalized
and
distribution. And of course, Corral's WAM is a
hospice facility, pretty
kind
much.
Kind of a hospice, and also collective, cooperative within the own. They grow their own and so forth. I've heard there's one in Santa Barbara, and that's what I see on the, you know, if you look up the
site. I've
safe.
Been there. I checked it out a
is
long
there,
time.
Is
yeah,
there actually,
times, yeah.
There is a distribution center in Santa Barbara. So I used to say there's nothing north of Long Beach or whatever, but that's not true. There is one in Santa
Barbara.
There
is one in Santa Barbara.
So
right?
I apologize for that.
Yeah, and he's a fairly decent guy. It's a small operation, but I think he probably serves a lot of patients.
How long has he been open?
I don't know, at least a year, because I visited him a few times during my research period before I opened, and quite a nice guy. He knew a lot about the laws and stuff.
Well, what do you hear from other pioneers here, like Roger Minch, who was prosecuted and convicted for his Felton Medical Marijuana Distribution Center, and, of course, from the Pacific Coast Cooperative,
what do I think of them?
No, what have you heard from them? Anything?
Oh, I've heard from Roger. I don't know that if Roger's operating or not. I really can't say. He's come in to see us a few times, but to ask questions, you know, if we were going to do clones and stuff like that. But
is he still appealing his case? Do you know anything about what his conviction is?
He was, but I didn't hear the outcome of it.
He got real sensitive about anybody talking about his case because
I don't know anything about it.
I think he may have gotten some flack from
when
his
he's come in to see
something.
Us. It's been different things we've talked about, but I don't know if he's operating. So I can't say about him.
So you're not a profiteer making thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Not by far, and I know there's probably people that think we are, but the truth is, you know, there's
prepared
a lot
to have me go over your books, Lisa Milano.
Want me to bring them in? We'll go right on the air.
I'll have to get my accountant to talk to you about
I'd
all
have
this.
To say we're keeping our head above water at this stage, but like I said, it'd be nice to be able to start paying myself. Eventually that'll happen. My bills are paid. I can be thankful of that.
How are your relations with the police departments?
Good. I've personally haven't spoke to the police chief in about a month or 8
Has
weeks.
Has he been in as a customer, perhaps, for his bad back?
No, but he's a nice man, actually. He's called me, Howard has called me to speak with me since our public hearing with the city council.
Since the police department opposed your opening, he's been very friendly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think the whole city supports it. I think everybody has their own job to do.
What
I don't hold anything against anybody.
About having to oppose
my opinion was, my whole thing was to prove that it could be done, and so far I think we've done it. The city hasn't had any complaints. Mm-hmm. I think they've probably had compliments more than complaints.
Any city council members been in to use your service?
No, but I thought today about inviting them to come as a group and check it out.
Kind of a smoke in right inside with their doctor's recommendations.
No, just come look at it. It's, you know, well, I'd like, it's a very professionally ran place, I think. Being at other clubs, we've got, you know, real security. It's a nice, you haven't even come to check it, actually.
I try to slip in at night and, you know, make silent purchases. I like to keep a low profile.
Uh-huh.
Actually, no, I did come by right before you opened, and I haven't been by since. I came by.
We'd walk you around, let you check it out.
Well, the folks who were there did. They showed. I mean, not much was ready because I think it was 3 days before you opened or 2 days. And
it's changed
quite
a lot.
Quite a big building and quite a number of rooms.
Our selection has changed a lot. We've got quite a nice. I don't know. I love doing this work. It's very gratifying, very satisfying, because we watch patients change.
Tell me about that.
The first day we opened, we had a patient come in that said he couldn't eat for 8 days because of his stomach cancer. And we hooked him up with some tainted liquid medicine, because he can't eat until he gets something in him. So he could get the liquid down him. He came in the next day and said he ate all night long. So we've kept him hooked up with the tainted liquids that help him, chocolate syrups, tinctures, which are mostly alcohol-based, but we do now have some that aren't. It's a glycerin-based. And actually, for him, he gets it at our cost because it's something he needs. So he gets it in large quantities, and it's fun to watch him. He's healthier. The color's back in his face. But that's not the only one. We've had other patients that are eating our Rice Krispie treats, and now they've quit taking OxyContin completely, or they're, you know, some other synthetic opium or morphine that they were on. So we see that happen every day, so it's really quite gratifying to see that part happen. So
this woman has a smile on her face and a twinkle in her eye. Have you been smoking or inhaling or ingesting?
No, you're going to make me cry is what it is.
Well, you know, we're talking with Lisa Molyneux of Greenway. You can call in if you got a question for her, 427-3772. She hasn't got long. She's been putting in long hours, as I understand it, and wants to go home and get dinner. Maybe, prepare to overthrow the state in some other more meaningful way. Well, it's pretty meaningful what you're doing. What about tax?
I'm ready to approach the state.
Are you?
Yeah.
Tax and Regulate is a proposal that, of course, passed in Oakland in November, which is, of course, a way of trying to deal with the whole drug war issue around marijuana by essentially appealing to the mercenary interests of local communities and suggesting that marijuana is not simply a beneficent herb, but it's also a tax revenue source for all the Dick Wilsons, Mike Rotkins, and Cynthia Matthews of the world who are very much concerned with city budgets.
I have to be honest. Mm-hmm. When I approached this Mike Rotkin at the time, I offered to do a voluntary tax, and I was told by him personally that Santa Cruz does not tax medicine. So I actually offered to pay a voluntary tax to the city, and that's what I was told. Now, I actually agree
trying
with
to bribe a public official.
No, I think that Tax and Regulate is a good avenue to take. Unfortunately, it's what it's going to take probably to get this on to get it changed.
Well, hasn't there been some sort of ruling by the auditor's office at the state level that you are they can tax illegal substances. Used to be you couldn't tax illegal substances, but now you can. There was some ruling a couple months ago on that.
Yeah,
subject.
I haven't had a chance to look it up, but I heard something.
You could have to send in some
IRS
agents.
Well, something that takes effect in January, and it's something that starts in January, I think.
I don't know.
But I do have a tax and financial guy that takes care of everything for Greenway, because I have to make sure that everything's at the top. You know, all our payroll's done through ADP. We pay workman's comp.
Now, you hear me.
We have a lot of overhead, believe it or not.
let me ask you about that. How much does it cost to operate your club per day?
Oh, per day? Well, it's been about $50,000 a month with payroll and costs of supplies, which are glass jars and pharmacy jars. I mean.
And the amount of money you take in per month?
Well, like I said, we're barely keeping our head above water at this point, so. It's pretty close.
Okay.
And, you know, I've had some patients come in and they say, why are your prices the same as the street price? And maybe they are. I don't know. I haven't bought off the street in a long time. But I know that our prices are very comparable to other clubs. It's sometimes we might be a little higher, but
what
we did
just
open.
What are your prices? Give us an example of the price.
Ranges from 35 to 60 at the top. 60 is very rare. It has to be.
Per eighth?
Yeah. And that's weighed at 3.7, not 3.5. But 55 and 50 is our average.
You're on the air with Lisa and Robert.
Hey, Robert, it's Andrea calling back real quick. You know, Lisa just said something, sorry to interrupt, about the jars. I'd like to know if she'd like me to save the peanut butter and jelly jars. I've also been saving some of the little Ziploc bags, too, for maybe they could recycle and just use them again. Would that help?
Well, no, I'm talking more about the jars that the flowers come in. I mean, if you've got those and you bring them back, we'll give you 50 cents back on them. And we pretty much have told all the patients that. And in the 6 or 10,000 we've put out, we've probably gotten 100 back. But, you know, it's good to get any of them back, so.
Yeah, because I was thinking about, because I do recycle, but I thought, you know, heck, if you can use those little peanut butter and jelly jars over again, then well, I'll just wash them, and when I come, I'll bring them to you.
That's up to you. Well, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty into the landfill and recycle thing. I'm pretty, you know, I have a big awareness about that, so. Yeah, that's a good
thing.
If
you don't, then you should recycle.
Yeah, okay.
But we reuse. We don't, the peanut butter and jelly, I don't know if those would be reused for that, but they could be used for something else.
Uh-huh. The only other thing I wanted to say is, you know, after I commented about the ID card, I don't know. I don't really think it's worth it because, you know, I think somebody called in the show not too far back saying that people were getting busted anyway. Well, I'm thinking, you know, why go and spend $35 on an ID card? If they're going to bust me, they're going to bust me. So what I did, I just made a copy of my recommendation and then took a black permanent marker and blacked out my social security number and my birth date and then just folded it up and put it in my glove box. And if I ever get pulled over, I'm just going to tell the officer, sorry, officer, I couldn't replace my ID card. Here's my old one. Don't have the $35. So whatever, you know, if they're going to bust you, you're going to bust you. Why waste $35? Anyway, that's all.
Well, I don't think there's any requirement that you
no.
have an ID card.
Yeah,
but
the
you
card
have to have
a
doctor's
a
recommendation. Is it?
Oh, yeah, that's why. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The card's
why
voluntary.
Spend the $35.
But there is the problem that you have to keep your recommendation current or some bullshit like that. Every
well,
year you've got to go in and cut down more money.
Yeah, every year.
And you should do what Andrea's done, which is put a copy in your glove box. Always have a copy with you.
And always have $100 every year to go back to the doctor to get another recommendation.
No, it didn't cost me anything. I don't know, but see, I see my doctor at the clinic, at the county health clinic. Now, I'm sure if people are going to private doctors, that's a whole other story, but it didn't cost me anything. I just asked him the first time I saw him, I said, would you be into writing a recommendation for me for medical marijuana? He said, sure, Megan, no problem. You know, he said, just, he goes, if I do this for you, he goes, I just want you to agree that you're only going to be coming to see me now. And I said, that's great. That's fine, because I was needing to leave Dr. Leonard anyway because she wouldn't do it. And I know Dr. Kelly won't do it. And I don't know about Dr. Hendricks, but I don't know.
Is Dr. Young who's doing it?
Yeah.
Yes,
or
Dr.
was doing
Young
it until we broadcast
it.
The name
but
on the air.
Right. You have to continue to see him, though.
Well, I think
you know,
this
people
is a real,
would have
this,
to give
think,
up the
I think
doctor
this is a,
seeing.
You know, I think this is a real political question here as to why should doctors be allowed to get away with, you know, stonewalling people who need medical marijuana letters. But
I agree.
Because these doctors are too timid to stand up for the rights of their patients but don't mind, you know, making the kind of money that doctors make.
In my opinion is if all the doctors would stand up for it, that the federal government couldn't ignore it anymore. Couldn't shove it under a corner.
Well, I think in Santa Cruz, there could be the kind of demonstrations that, for example, women used to have against porno.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to go in and rip up magazines in porno stores. Hell, Carrie Nation used to go run around with an axe in the liquor stores.
Yeah, but people do need your medicine. And when Lisa was talking about that gentleman with the stomach cancer, I'm really grateful for the chocolate syrup that I got yesterday because my stomach's in such bad shape. I haven't been able to eat. And I, you know, I think these pain pills
What's
are just
this
eating
about
up my
stomach. Hold it. Wait a minute. Chocolate syrup? Is this some sort of some voodoo mixture
tainted
to your
tainted,
chocolate
the syrup? Tainted syrup, yeah. I put it in hot milk and I make hot cocoa out of it. And it's good on my stomach. Because I think these pain pills are tearing my stomach up real bad.
Syrup.
It's tainted. It's a serving of tainted chocolate syrup.
You don't mean tainted. You mean tinted.
Tainted.
Tainted. Like
it's like medicated.
Oh, medicated. Tainted doesn't mean
and
spoiled.
And it can be put in coffee. No. It could be in coffee or on ice cream or make chocolate milk out of it. And
you're inviting me to the soda shop after the show.
It works for a lot of patients. But we had to go out of our way to look for liquids because we had so many patients that needed liquids. So
hey,
that was one of them.
All right. Well, that sounds good. Of course, nobody brought me anything. So anyway,
you
anything
have
else?
Your recommendation.
No, I just wanted to call in and comment about that real quickly. So,
thanks,
anyway,
man.
I'll save those jars and those bags for you, Lisa, and
cool.
I'll try to remember to bring them in, if not next time, probably the time after
thanks,
that.
Andrea.
So
okay.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. So what about Peter Koch? Heard from him?
No, I haven't. But I did want to reply to the thing about the street prices. It occurred to me that someone said to me, you know, why are your prices the same? But I kind of felt possibly the street guy's either charging too much or we're charging too little, because what we offer is a huge selection that has been looked at carefully. And we offer security, and we offer a nice location to go get it, not a corner in the rain. So I kind of figured our prices are at an average at 50 and 55 an eighth. Mm-hmm. But our goal is to bring it down. But we've been open 10 weeks. It's kind of hard. I try all the time to find ways to bring prices down, but it's not going to probably happen until February at least.
Tax and regulate is something that could be passed at a city level by a majority of the city council.
Okay with me. I'm for it.
Now, it seems peculiar to me. I've talked about this on the air.
Let's set an example.
Yeah. I mean, it seems peculiar to me that, for example, the city council passed this completely phantom-like Office of Compassionate Use.
I love it.
Which doesn't exist.
And
won't exist. It won't exist because
the government feds have to agree to it.
Because the city has ruled that the feds have to agree to it. The city can open its own Office of Compassionate Use anytime it wants.
It's a challenge to the
instead of doing that, they are saying, we're going to wait until the Supreme Court, because that's the highest court, makes its ruling. Doesn't this indicate that this is the most, to me,
no,
it's the most gutless kind of measure that the city could do. The city could open up an Office of Compassionate Use and not actually distribute marijuana, but they could start distributing information.
Educating.
They could start educating. But Rotkin has said he will do nothing of the kind until he gets a ruling from a federal court. And to me, this is the same kind of shit that Rotkin engaged in a year and a half ago, 2.5 years ago, when he said he would reform the zoning laws. And because he didn't, it took you a year to get a place, because you had to get a variance, because you had to run from landlord to landlord, because I think you'll agree, and tell me if you disagree, that the current medical marijuana law in the city makes it very difficult for distribution centers to open.
Sure, but I always understood that one had to open to prove that it could work or not, so...
Why would
we're
that
doing
be?
That
why would that? But why would that be? Since there was a distribution center open for 5 years, and it wasn't closed by the police.
That was then. This is now. That's all I can say. Five years makes a big difference. I don't know what happened 5 years ago. I can't speak to that.
Well, I can. I was here, and I don't understand. I can't understand why that would be.
I mean, I was here, but I didn't know.
Right? Did you
anything
hear
about dispensaries at that time?
Did you hear of any problems that club had? Did you hear of any difficulties in the sense
no.
of, you know? Did you hear of any riots outside
I think
the club?
It was probably just more new, and yeah, I don't
it wasn't
know.
New.
I can't.
It went on year after year after year.
New
but
to public, not to this
it
local
wasn't,
public, but
it wasn't
to
the public. I mean, the public
everybody.
Heard about it. The public had no objection. It closed
I
eventually
didn't know about
because
it, and I live here.
Internal,
I
yeah, but it closed because of internal disputes. You had to be kind of on the, you know, it was on the QT in a certain
and then the
sense.
Ordinance was done, and you know, I have no idea about that part of the history.
The ordinance was done with the corrals in the back
all
room,
done.
And all the other distributors were set aside without being approached.
But the only history I know is mine, where mine begins, basically.
Well, no,
because I discovered the ordinance, and that's where I started.
If you listen to free radio, you know of the rest of it.
I don't get you in Boulder Creek.
I'll give you my literature. And I've given it to you
I
before. And we've talked about this in telephone conversations. So you may not agree with my reading of history on this.
No, no, I don't know of the history. That's
well,
what I'm saying. I know only what you've told me, and
right.
that's not enough for
well,
me to form an
opinion. Ask any other marijuana distributor in town, including the corrals,
if
the facts that I'm talking about are if I'm giving you false information.
I'm not arguing with you at all.
Yeah,
I mean,
I don't think I am.
I don't think they should have been closed down.
Right. Well, they were closed down because of
The ordinance.
The ordinance, because I mean, actually, there were two clubs. One, two clubs were open, and both of them were closed. In fact, the ordinance was amended to close the club a first time. And
well, all I know is they had to open and be closed for me to get here. It's part of the history. We wouldn't be here today.
Like, it sounds like a Zen approach.
It's
like
true.
The Jews had to
Everything
die
happens,
for Israel to be created. You know, I mean, I don't know. I think that's a bunch of horse shit, frankly.
No, I believe that everything happens for a reason.
I know. Maybe it's a philosophical difference. I don't think you need to have pain and destruction for there to be enlightenment. And I think that a politician...
I agree with you.
Right. And I think that we have to hold these politicians accountable for continuing to decline... To change the law.
I do love that Santa Cruz put that out there. It's just a challenge to the amendment, 10th Amendment. I wish more cities would put the same challenge out, because what would happen? One city, maybe, but get all of the cities in California.
It has nothing to do with expanding local medical marijuana, Lisa, as far as I can see.
Well,
hi, you're on
free
radio with Cranky Robert and Optimist.
Cranky Robert.
I'm always optimistic,
you know,
damn it.
I'm feeling hurt right now. I'm feeling hurt that you're, that, is it Lisa?
Yes.
Lisa's here.
That Lisa basically just said that she doesn't believe the information that you've given her.
Oh, I didn't say that.
Well,
I just only have one opinion. I would have to research.
You hadn't heard enough, or you didn't feel like you had enough information to form an opinion. And for me, you know, I think it's pretty easy to form an opinion, you know, that the way that this is being done in this county, even though it's as great as it is, there's still a lot of flaws.
Oh, I agree, but I'm not
like
making an opinion about a club I don't know about.
About going to a doctor, you know, I have to give up my doctor to try to get a medical recommendation, and there's, like, laws that, I mean, I've seen these papers that they're called the patient's rights, and the patients have rights, such as knowing what the different types of treatments are that are out there, and then making their own decision about what they want to do and what kind of treatment they want. And I don't think that really happens very often in reality with doctors.
Right.
They don't say, well, these are all the different painkillers that you can take. Which do you want? They don't say, oh, well, would you like to try medical marijuana?
It's because they're afraid of their license being taken away by the federal government.
And, you know, I mean, it's unfortunate, but I just wanted to say that it kind of hurts me to hear you say that, you know, you don't really feel like Robert's given you enough information, because one of the things that I feel like Robert does, I mean, I don't always agree with him either. You know, we've definitely had debates, and that's one of the things I really appreciate about Robert, is that he's willing to debate and still be respectful. But it just sounded to me like you were saying that the information he's given you isn't enough, or isn't, like, you need, like, more authorization, that it's actually factual. And am I misunderstanding?
Yeah, probably. But the thing is Robert has his opinion, and sometimes that's pretty, you know,
strong.
Radical or strong. And I love Robert. I'm sitting here talking to him right now, and, you know, it's not...
We're just good friends. I keep that in mind.
Exactly. But I don't have the history of the other clubs, because I didn't even know about them. So I can't comment on those clubs, because I don't know anything about them.
I'll have Kate Wells give you a call.
And that's all that I was commenting on.
Well, I guess since you're a club yourself now, it might be interesting, if not somehow beneficial, to research what the histories were of those other clubs, to maybe protect yourself from having the same thing happen to you that's happened to them. Or, you know, maybe in the attempt to encourage more clubs to open up. I also wanted to let you know that 50 or 55 for an eighth is street price.
Okay, thanks.
And sometimes street price can be 300 or 250 an ounce. So quantity sometimes gets you a little bit of a price break, but those are definitely street prices, because I don't have a card. And I guess that's all I'm going to say. I'm sure I've been identified by now.
We're coming to take you away.
What?
We're coming to take you away now.
Well, my gate's locked, so
all right.
You'll have to break through.
Hey, or maybe to smoke you out, so to speak.
Be afraid.
Hey, thank you for calling.
Bye.
And thanks for the support.
We do get discounting also. That's what... I mean, that might be what our board prices are, but then there's discounts at half quarters, halves, and ounces, and then at 2 ounces.
Were you saying
and
before?
And then there's other discounts, too, that apply. But so by the end, you know, you might get an ounce, not for $2.50 from us, probably, because we don't have that quality. At this time, we have had, and you could.
You mean low quality?
Low. No, that would be more of a mid-quality. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we do have that. You know, it's... starting to come in a little more. We've had a lot of the high end come to our club and less of the low end. We need some kind of we need to have a whole big range. We've got about 40 varieties right now, and the lowest being at 35.
We're talking with Lisa Milano of Greenway. This is Free Radio 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. Phone number here should you want to ask a question before Lisa dashes off to dinner, or should we say staggers off to dinner, is 427-3772. Again, my concern about the Office of Compassionate Use is it was a fraud, that there was no Office of Compassionate Use. I mean, I don't mind their saying, okay, you know, we're interested in legally supporting, you know, your opinion, but instead it was billed as something else. And That's one thing. The second thing is I think they could very well open an office of compassionate use, and they could do so, you know, in Santa Cruz. Why not? We're in 2005. This was passed in 1996. Santa Cruz passed a measure in 1993, actually the county of Santa Cruz, Proposition A. We have these people who posture as progressives. Now, I acknowledge that in your case, Rotkin and Matthews and the gang got off the dime and passed your permit after a year.
I know.
You know, in the summer before the vacation.
Their problem, though. It was finding a property that was a problem.
But the problem really had to do with they created it. They created the problem.
Started with the ordinance.
You're on Free Radio with Robert and Lisa. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Is this on the air?
Yes, you are.
Is this that the Free Radio 101 point something?
I'm ashamed to admit that it is.
101 point what?
101. Boy, I've forgotten what it is.
101.1.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Lisa.
Okay. Look, what I can never understand, since 1970, it's now 35 years later, and all this time, it seems like 99.9% of the time, everybody, left wing, right wing, middle wing, has been saying nothing but lies about THC hempweed, and nobody mentions what its effect is on the mind.
Hold it. Wait, slow down. Nothing but lies about what? I'm sorry.
About the George Washington psychedelic clean and sober THC hempweed that makes reality more real and more colorful.
Okay, what is that?
THC hemp hashish is psychedelic. That means it makes you feel pain more.
Now, slow down. Are you talking about...
Feel pain and pleasure
slow
more.
Down. Slow down. Are you talking
see
about...
more colors.
Oh, whoa. Are you talking about marijuana?
THC hempweed. Yeah, but why do you got to call it this phony Mexican name when it's British name?
Well,
hemp.
Whatever name it is. I'm
this
just wanting to sure we're talking... I want to make sure we're talking about the same thing. So we're talking about...
It's psychedelic THC, tetrahydrocannabinol.
But what I would call... Hemp. Okay, I gotcha. Go ahead.
Ancient plant from ancient Europe. It's British hemp. It's called hennep in Anglo-Saxon. It's
yes,
Mexican.
Sir.
Has
what about
to
it?
It?
What about it? What about it?
Well, why are they telling lies about it? They won't admit George Washington grew it. They won't admit it's psychedelic. They won't admit that it's more sober than coffee, tobacco, nutmeg, beef, pork, homosexuality, adultery, abortion.
Slow down, caller. Now, you're asking me, I can't tell you, there's all kinds of different reasons, I imagine, but, of course, the important thing is that we tell truth about it, and then we change these stupid policies, right?
That's what I'm trying to do, but nobody will tell the truth.
Hold it. How can a psychedelic get rid of pain?
It's not possible.
Wait a minute.
Possible. It happens every day with our patients, but they use edibles, which is a much different effect on your body.
A psychedelic makes you feel pain more.
I'm sorry, we've...
THC hemp is a psychedelic. It makes you feel pain more. But by feeling the pain more, becoming aware of it, then you can know how to get rid of it eventually. But that's the real truth of it. It's really, there is no medical effect of hemp, hashish, marijuana plant. There is no medical effect of it, except for just a general overall...
Caller, excuse me.
It makes everything more real.
Caller.
It makes you more color, sound, body, feel, and flavor.
Hello, caller.
That is the caller, overall
caller,
effect.
Caller. Are you yourself, should we say... give me some sense
I'm
of your...
I'm not allowed to use it. For 99.9% of my life, I've been prohibited from using the THC
Why?
Hemp.
Why?
Mescal and sulfur. Because of the terrorist, secret police, mafia, dictatorship run by dyke faggots.
Well, I'm going to roll on this because it's hard for me to get a word in edgewise. And also,
I'm the one that's not allowed to talk.
No, you're talking. You're talking a lot, but I've got...
Only in this one instance.
Well, that's fine. That's the instance where you're talking to me, and I'm trying to ask you a question I'm finding it hard to do. Okay.
I've been prohibited and terrorized. They threatened to fuck me up the butt in a jail. They won't let me do sex. For 53 years, I've not been allowed to do sex. They're trying to force me to be homosexual against my will. They're trying to force me to be a chicken faggot child molester against my will.
Indeed.
They hate long-haired men.
Well, I'm gonna roll on you there. But and anything else you want to say before we go?
Yeah, Israel is a Muslim name. Jesus is the Muslim Messiah. And Palestine is anti-Muslim. And
Thank
Alexander
you.
The Great is anti-Muslim.
Okie doke. Bye-bye. My goodness, that was a
quite... Okay, I have to go now.
Lisa, thank
you. Love you, dude.
Thank you for coming in. For those who want to sample the merchandise or get more information, you got a website yet?
Not yet. I'm working on it, I promise.
Of course, your phone number is there.
420-1640.
Okay, and
831.
It's at 140 Du Bois. You're open every weekday. You want to take one last call, assuming that it has nothing to do with Israel.
Monday through Saturday.
Being fucked up the butt. Hang on. Monday through Saturday. Monday through Friday, it's...
11 to 6. Saturday is 10 to 6.
Hi, you're on Free Radio. You were, that is. Lisa, thank you for coming in. And
he's going to try again.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, you know what? I like the good old wacky tobacco. And I also like ganja. whatever that other guy was talking about where the original name came from, I don't know if I completely believe that. Unfortunately, I'd have to see it in more than through a radio station program. But I did want to say that I don't really think that marijuana does increase pain or make people more aware of pain. I mean, it definitely depends on the pain that the person's in. If it's a constant pain that is throbbing, that is constantly there, I think it can definitely ease that kind of pain. But if it's like, you know, going into birth and having contractions as you're giving birth, from experience I can say it wasn't very helpful. But I know that for my lower back pain that I feel that's constantly there, it definitely helps me. So from my own body's knowledge, you know, I can see his point, but I just want to say that it's definitely eased my pain. And psychological is something, I guess, that it's not really, they don't really give it out for people for psychological reasons. And I think that's really a shame, because I think a lot of us are suffering depression with all the war. And I heard a lot of fear in that last caller. I heard a lot of anger in that last caller's comments. And, you know, for that kind of pain that someone's in, I definitely think marijuana is beneficial.
Thanks,
Cole. So thank you very much for doing the work you're doing, Lisa, and thanks, Robert, for your show.
Hey, thanks for the update on how marijuana affects you in pain.
Well, you know, I'm sure it's different for each person, but I just wanted to give you my 2 cents because, you know, it's 2 cents.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Cole. What about that, just quickly before you go? Any general... Is there a majority of people find it helps with pain, or it varies from person to person?
Especially with the back pain like she's talking about.
How about childbirth?
I don't know. That's the first I've heard about that, but that's good information to have. But actually, I take that back, because one of our workers' wife had a midwife with her for her child, and they used a tincture after the birth, actually, but not during. So that was a marijuana tincture that they used.
Free Radio, you may be on the air with Robert and possibly with Lisa. She may slip
out. This is your producer.
Hey, producer.
Hi.
I have a copy of John Lust's herb book, which is the only... I have all these different herb books about medicinal properties of different herbs, but this is the only one that actually has cannabis listed.
What's the name of the book there, producer?
It's called The Herb Book by John Lust. And it says in here that marijuana is an analgesic, hypnotic, topical, anesthetic, anti-asthmatic, antibiotic, anti-epileptic, an anti-spasmodic, an antidepressant, and tranquilizer, anti-tussive, that's for people with scratchy throats like I have, appetite stimulant.
Definitely.
Oxytocic, and I think that's what Earth Mommer was referring to, how it didn't help her labor. It actually sped it up a little bit.
Oh.
Which maybe didn't feel good at the time.
Right, but it got it out faster.
Preventative and anodyne for neuralgia, including migraine, aid to psychotherapy, an agent to ease withdrawal from alcohol and opiates.
And when was this book published?
Okay.
Yeah, I've heard that they are using it for detox for alcoholics.
Oh, yeah. I think Todd McGurry is doing a lot of work with that research. This came out in 1974.
And the name of the author?
John Lust, L-U-S-T.
Hmm. I'd like to see a new print of that, maybe. I'll have to get that name from you, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the American Medical Association posted it as an analgesic, which is what the first thing that you said on that list.
Yeah, analgesic, hypnotic.
You know, we also have a balm that you can use on your muscles. It works really great.
Well,
really?
It's a topical anesthetic, too.
Yeah, it works good.
For pain relief.
I find that a lot of our pain patients want to use edibles, and it lasts longer for them. And it's gotten people off their OxyContin and other things, Vicodin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
one of its most life-saving qualities is an appetite stimulant for people who have cancer or AIDS or some kind of wasting syndrome. Most pharmaceutical drugs that you would get from, you know, the corporate pharmacies are appetite depressant. So marijuana is really a very valuable medicine.
I'm with you,
and
Becky.
And not easily replaced by chemical substances.
So, Becky, you've used marijuana for years. What kind of is it an analgesic for you? When you have a pain condition, does it impact that negatively, positively? What does it do?
Oh, it definitely helps with pain. And it helps with pain differently than, say, if you took an opioid or codeine or something, which just kind of dulls it, a codeine.
It masks
thing.
It, right.
Opioid.
It's actually still there. You
what
just
marijuana
don't know
it. Does is it sort of causes you to relax a little bit. You're aware of the pain, but it doesn't seem to bother you as much. And
it's a mind relaxant.
My primary reason for using it is stress reduction, because mm-hmm. it really works really well for me for that.
Gotcha. Well, I appreciate the,
information.
Yeah, that's interesting stuff.
I can get you a copy of this page if you'd like it.
I'm going to try to find the book or see if there's a new print of it.
Why don't you give each other a call and get in touch?
Okay, great.
Thanks.
Thanks for being on, Lisa.
Thanks, Becky.
Thanks, Becky. Phone line's open, 427-3772, Lisa Molino, Greenway, and I'm Robert. This is Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I guess there's a new case that just came out that had to do, I guess Angel Raich has refiled her case.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Let's see, I've got this under.
Good for her.
Yeah, it's...
Don't give up. That's what I always say.
Don't give up the ship. I think I should let you get out of the studio. Here it is. Medical marijuana case heads back to court. Do you want me to? I think I'll read this, but you're welcome to hang or take off whatever you feel like doing, Lisa.
Yeah, I should get going. But you're going to read it?
I'm going to read a little bit about it. Oakland woman whose landmark medical marijuana case was rebuffed 5 months ago by U.S. Supreme Court renewed her legal fight. This is a story in the Mercury News of November 23rd. By filing papers, lawyers for Angel Raich, 40, filed a brief in the federal Ninth Circuit, arguing that federal efforts to restrict medical marijuana violate her rights to take the only medication that allows her to avoid intolerable pain and death. Brief marks a new legal strategy for Raich, who previously had argued that federal drug laws traditionally focus on interstate commerce and thus did not apply to Raich's use of locally grown marijuana. That argument was rejected by the U.S. Supreme Court in a 6-3 ruling in June. The latest legal salvo by Raich also argues that prohibiting her from taking medically necessary cannabis violates her due process rights and that the Federal Controlled Substances Act does not allow the federal government to prohibit medical use within a state that authorizes it. California is one of 10 states that does. Raich suffers from an inoperable brain tumor and a wasting syndrome that makes it extremely difficult for her to keep food down. After trying 35 different pharmaceutical treatments, Raich said she found that marijuana is the only drug that she can tolerate that holds her seizures and other symptoms in check. This case implicates perhaps the most fundamental right of all, the right to preserve one's life, said Robert Raich, plaintiff's husband. Spokesman of the U.S. Attorney's Office, Luke McCauley, declined comment. Raich's appeal will be heard by the same three-judge panel that upheld her right to use medical marijuana in 2003, which was reversed by the U.S. Supreme Court in June. Raich is mother of two, hopes the U.S. Ninth Circuit will again rule in her favor. I just want the opportunity to be a mother to my children without having to live in constant fear that the federal government will raid my home or throw me in jail. What about children? This medication is banned for children right now. What's the story with that?
For children or like yes. little children? Or
minors.
Minors? No, it's not. The state does allow it with parental or guardian consent and doctor's recommendation.
Maybe a child is calling in. Hi there. You're on Free Radio?
Yeah. I heard Indonesia had death penalty against marijuana.
I see.
I heard they...
Did you just call in a moment ago?
Malaysia did too.
And he got a question for my guest before she makes a quick...
We're not in Egypt.
Why
so.
Do they think ganja is relaxing? It makes you more aware of sensation.
Are you asking?
Is that what it does to you?
I'm not allowed to use it for 99% of my life.
Who doesn't allow you to use it?
The fascist dictatorships all over the world.
No, I mean, why don't you just go out and get something? Because
I'm not allowed to. It's illegal.
No, in California it's legal if you have a medical condition. In California it is legal if you have a medical condition. Are you in California? Or?
Yeah, I'm in California.
Well, why don't you go?
It's illegal here.
Have you got a doctor?
No. Not any that I could trust.
Well,
Michael Tears,
that may be a problem between you and the doctor, but, I mean, do you have a medical condition that might be alleviated by use of marijuana, do you believe?
Psychedelic can make me feel pain more, could help get rid of the pain once you know that it's there.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you seen a doctor in the last few years for any condition at all?
I think they lie about the CAT scans.
Well, let me ask you. Have you seen a doctor? You haven't seen
it. I'd rather see a homeopathic doctor.
Well, okay. How about going to a homeopathic doctor and ask?
Because they're too rich and wealthy, and they don't listen to me. They ignore me when I call them.
I see. Well, so there are some problems you have. Any solutions for our caller?
But just because a threatened with homosexual rape in jail, that doesn't mean I actually experienced it.
Right. Well, let's not get into that at this point.
No one ever.
It's not that I'm not sympathetic, but my concern is to focus on.
What makes you think it's illegal in California?
Well, it's very illegal unless you have a doctor prescription. It's almost
exactly.
impossible to get a doctor prescription.
We're talking about medical uses here.
This is about medical uses.
The psychedelic THC hemp weed of George Washington, which makes reality more real, more vivid, more colorful.
Anyway, any other questions?
Makes you scared.
Caller,
because you should know what's
any
going
questions?
On. You should be alert and aware.
Caller, any questions?
Like, no,
I'm going to roll on you, caller.
Said,
I'm
like
sorry. Take care of yourself, man. As you can see, I'm an impatient and censoring talk show host on occasion. So,
yeah, well,
I'm sorry. I demand
it's a little bit
people.
Green. It's a lot of talk right there.
Well, he's got concerns, but
I know.
But we have a format here which I insist on.
So you were just going to go to commercial, right?
I'm going to go to not go to commercial, but to the I've got tape to play, and I guess the only I have the same concerns that I've had before. I'm a little bit worried because I find myself rolling around to these politically acceptable topics like, oh, yeah, do we support Angel Rich? You know, oh, yeah, do we support, you know, the use of medical marijuana? Who doesn't in this in an enlightened community? The question is, what about our local politicians and their ability to really make this accessible? Now, Rotkin's claim is that your club is sufficient for the needs of Santa Cruz, as far as he knows.
I don't know. It might be, but...
What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, so far, I mean, a lot of people don't even know we're out there. A lot of people just finding us, and so we haven't done
any advertising. What about a big billboard with a marijuana leaf blinking on and off?
So far, we're able to handle the people that have come through quite well, so we're not overwhelmed by far.
What percentage of the people do you turn away?
I don't think we turn anybody away, unless they don't have a valid ID or something.
How many people do you call?
Not many.
A few don't have a valid ID.
Maybe a few, maybe 5, 10. But they've come back with a valid ID after we explained to them what they needed.
And how many homeless people would you say have you served?
About 10% of our thing, so maybe 100 or so. But
and we're talking free marijuana or marijuana at cost?
Different. Some of it's free. We even have hospice type patients that probably WHAM would take care of, but we are giving them free medication also, those particular patients. But it's a one-on-one type. You know, we have to make the call with the patient as we talk to them, but. With the homeless, sometimes we don't even know we're helping a homeless person. They just claim they're low income and they only have so much money, but they need so much medicine, so we help them out. So we don't always know who the homeless are. They don't come up and say, hey, I'm homeless. You know, they just say, I've got this much money and here's what I need, and we try to work with those patients, you know. Quite often I might hear they're homeless or they're just on unemployment. They're not working. So there's a lot of situations. If they're on Medi-Cal and have their Medi-Cal card, you know, we do some discounting for that.
Is there a waiting list?
No.
No waiting list.
No, why a waiting list for what?
I don't know.
To get in?
No, probably not. You just sort of walk in the door. It's a pretty big door.
Yeah, we have a security guard and a receptionist, and once you get past them, you're free to...
You have a metal detector. Do they pat you down when you...
He does. We use a wand.
You really do?
Yep.
Have you had anybody with weapons show up at the...
No, a lot of pocket knives, which they leave at the security desk, and they get to take it back with them when they leave. We've had a lot of people compliment us with the security because they feel safe.
No attempted break-ins?
No.
And you have 24-hour security?
Yep. If we're not physically there, it's monitored and, you know, by first alarm. They're watching it on camera.
Any medical care packages for our vets over in Iraq?
Sure.
Actually, that's a joke. But
how are they going to get it?
Well, the serious question is, what about vets? Do vets come in frequently and use your program?
Yeah, they sure do.
And what kind of conditions do vets are there? That's a condition. I think question I might ask you, not just with vets. What condition is the most frequent that you treat for? I mean, do you ask people what condition they have, or do you just sort of look at their letter?
No, we don't ask. I don't ask. If someone presents himself as a low income or something, I actually sit down and try to talk with them personally and figure out what state is their low income. Is it, you know, that they only make $3,000 a month, or is it that they make $300 a month?
And we three go, a month.
We go from there. Because, you know, everybody has their own idea of what starving is. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're trying to help those people that really need that help. Because, you know, it got to one point at once somebody heard somebody at the counter say they needed help, and they saw us give them help. So the whole room all of a sudden needed help. So we've tried to come up with a system that's more quiet. You know, if they present themselves, we talk to them in a more private space and mark their ID in some form so that they can identify themselves to the people at the counter without having to say it, so that they know there's a discount coming to that person. So they need to talk to me, basically.
So in other words, if I talk to you, I can kind of get on the QT. I can get a little, should we say, special treatment, you know? Yeah.
But we work it out with just about everybody that comes in there. I haven't been turned anybody away, as far as I know. Maybe one of my coworkers has. I don't. There have been a few times when I haven't been there. And I'm not sure how others act when I'm not there. But mostly they're supposed to wait for me, so I don't think that they do anything. They probably just
how
say.
How much time do you spend on the premises? I mean, are you out? I knew you were out of town a lot before. Are you?
No,
are you
not
out of town
at all. I just
now?
Was out of town for Thanksgiving, but
usually
was only
you're
for
there
3 days. So yeah, I'm pretty much there from
dawn to dusk.
Yeah, we don't open until 11, but we usually get there early.
I hope you're not engaging in any illegal massage activities
not
on
yet
the premises. You know, I mean, that could be serious.
That'll be
stuff.
February.
You're gonna go back to city council and try to get an okay to do massage.
Well, we shouldn't have to go back to them if there's no complaints.
And so far, there have been no complaints?
Right. The review is conditioned upon complaints. If there aren't any complaints, then we can deal directly with the planning department on those issues.
Well, I think I probably have a lot of questions that I should be asking you, but I'm in a
I'll come back,
soporific
I
mood here. Yeah, do come back or call back, and I thank you for coming in. I didn't expect you to show up.
It's easier to come in because it's hard to talk on the phone.
But next time, you know, try to bring some cool bud with you, baby. I mean, you know.
Cool, I will. I'll try.
Or some hot bud or something. One of those big volcanic inhalers that I've heard so
much
about.
Yeah, we do sell those, by the way.
What are they, $600 or some weird?
$420 out the door with checks. That's the best price going.
Right.
The city did give me approval to sell those. I had to go and talk to the planning department.
And they can be they're also available downtown, different stores.
Sure, but it's a big benefit for a lot of patients to use a volcano. So
how many head shops are around in Santa Cruz area? Do you know?
I don't. There's at least three that I know. But
I've seen, you know, there's head shops I realize that have been there for years. I've never even seen them or
see,
noticed
them. See, that's
it.
And that's how I am with the old
there's one on
41st
Avenue.
I didn't know that they existed here 5 years
the chill
ago.
Out cafe.
And I lived here. So how blind can a person be? I don't know, but I traveled a lot, so there you go.
Well, I guess I should finally give a sally about the drug war in Santa Cruz, because even though you have your permits and people do get access to your place, and I'm glad they do, they also get access to the county jail, and a lot of the county, I think at least half the county jail is drug war prisoners. And as far as I'm concerned, that is, and I hope as far as you're concerned, it's a major abuse and outrage and something that even the local ACLU, which has got its drug policy center here, doesn't seem to give a shit about in terms of any kind of public statements, any kind of action, any kind of educational research. I mean, for example, you have any program to provide medical marijuana for people in the jails?
Interesting. No, I don't, but I'd have to work that out with the county, wouldn't I?
Yeah, or the probation department. People told you if they're on probation, they can't use...
That should be accessible to them in California, because it even allows for, parolees.
But if they have drug testing requirements, I mean, do you know if any... Has that question come up in your discussions with anybody coming into the club?
No. We've had some parolees come in, and they have to show a receipt for their medicine. So we've worked out receipts with some of those people other than, you know.
Parolees, but not people on probation.
Right. I think it was parolees mostly.
Well,
and
I think that it would be easier to get
marijuana.
Well,
the state law allows for it, of course. No discrimination there. They can use it, too. So I don't know why they couldn't in the jails. That's something to approach.
Yeah, I mean,
it's medicine.
That would be, you might want to contact Sheriff Robbins and see what his situation is there, whether he's interested in...
I'm still concentrating on Greenway. In a few months, I'll be able to do something else, but
Are you still looking for workers, or have you got a full component there?
Right now, I can't. I could use more, but I can't take any. I've got lots of names and stuff hanging out there that people that want to work there, but financially, we need to stay where we are for a while.
You're on Free Radio with Lisa and Robert.
Hello?
Hi.
Robert.
Yes.
So you were discussing the whether somebody on probation could have medical marijuana.
Correct.
I knew a woman that was on probation, and she tested positive for marijuana, and her probation officer wanted to violate her. So
right.
She went to Berkeley, got a recommendation from her doctor up there, went to back to her probation officer with a recommendation. The probation officer still wanted to violate her, so the probation officer decided, well, maybe we should let a judge decide. They went in front of Judge Kelly, and Judge Kelly said that no, since she had a doctor's recommendation, and because of Prop 215, that he couldn't send her to jail.
Ah, shucks.
Yeah, that it allows for no discrimination for medical marijuana.
And so, and the whole thing is that she wasn't even on probation for marijuana. She was on probation for cocaine or something, you know. So it wasn't like, I mean, why they were testing her for marijuana is beyond me, but they were.
Huh. Well, that's good news. You haven't heard of any contrary cases, I take it?
No, I haven't heard of anybody that's been violated that had a medical marijuana card.
Huh. Well, that's good news, because I know I've heard from homeless people that their marijuana has been taken by the police and not returned. Again, I haven't verified this with the police department or followed up independently, and this could be inaccurate.
Well, the people that had their marijuana taken have cards, though.
That's what he said, yeah.
You know, because if they don't have a card, then the cops can take it.
Well, he said he did, and that's the point.
Well, he might have said that he had had one, but did he actually, could he produce anything to the cops? You know?
All right.
Oh, that I don't know.
You know, I mean, the cops basically will follow the law. The law is that if you have a card, you can carry marijuana around.
Well,
and
his claim
so
was
just because you claim to have a card doesn't mean you have one.
His claim was that he had a card, that he showed it to the police, not a card necessarily, but a card or a doctor's recommendation, and the police seized his marijuana, arrested him anyway, and charged him, and twice, he said. So, I mean, that was his story, and again, I don't have any documentation further.
Right.
That's
what
well,
that's, I mean, I'm not going to take the side of the police here, but it sounds kind of fishy that it would happen to the guy twice.
He also claimed that when he tried to reclaim his marijuana, which the judge ordered returned to him, they told him he had to bring his attorney with him when he went to the police station.
Uh-huh.
Which, it sounds bizarre to me, but he described it in such detail, and he seemed so otherwise coherent that it seemed like it could well be that he was telling the truth. But it's hard to tell, because I didn't, you know, carry it any further. And he also didn't want to be identified. He became nervous about it.
Right. Well, I mean, maybe they wanted him to bring his attorney with him so that, you know, they could have, you know, some verifiable witness there that they actually returned it to him without him having being able to say, oh, I didn't get it back. I went down to the police station and they wouldn't give it to me.
Well, they could take a photo or something, I suppose. I mean, and it's true. It's kind of speculative. But I appreciate your information that a judge has ruled, at least in one case, that marijuana cannot be withheld at the whim of a probation officer.
Right. I mean, yeah, the probation officers like to throw people in jail for anything, you know. And a lot of times people get their probation violated and then they go to court and the judge lets them go, you know.
That happens frequently in Santa Cruz, or?
It happens quite often, you know, where the probation officer, what they like to do is they like to throw people in jail on Friday. So they have to spend the weekend there.
Well, it's an attempt to help them get out of the rain, Scott.
Yeah, and then, you know, Monday or Tuesday they go to court, and more than likely the judge is going to, you know, say, well, are you going to be a good boy or girl now? And then, as long as the person says yes, the judge will let him go, you know.
Gotcha.
But it depends on the judge also, you know.
Well, Judge Acow isn't going to be doing that anymore, I'll tell you that.
Right, and
She died, I guess, 2 days ago.
You know, you ought to call. I was thinking, you know, after I read that in the paper, that, you know, possibly you should call Arnold and see if he would appoint you as her fill-in.
Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Judge, yeah. Robert Norris. It has a nice ring to it.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get Lisa to recommend
that. You can send people to their death, you know. Minor infraction.
No clemency from me. Norris is iron-handed, particularly towards city officials.
No doubt.
No doubt. Listen, thank you for calling, Scott.
All right.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, your show's almost over.
My show is almost over. I want to thank you for coming in. Lisa, welcome to Hang. I'm going to play a little tape for the last 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Unless there's any comments or thoughts you want to pass on before you go. Any, you know, dynamite bud you want to give me just for the heck of it.
Get your recommendation.
Yeah, okay. Well, I got to work on that one. All right. So we've been talking with Lisa Molyneux of Greenway. Thanks for being in here. And she's at 140 Du Bois. She's at 420.
1640.
We'll try one more call. You're on free radio. Make it quick. Go ahead. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Is that the same Robert Norris that didn't believe that Juanita Perrin and Mystery Sprout sprayed Surflin, Arisal, and EL-119 poison on me?
It's the same Robert Norris that's cutting you off. Thank you, Lisa, for coming in the station. And again, with my apologies to the caller, I don't have time. It sounds like a complicated issue that I can't really get into because I only have 10 minutes left in the show. So another time, perhaps we'll do it. Probably not, but you know how it is. Lisa, thanks.
You're welcome.
And Hang if you'd like. I'm going to play now a little bit more from tapes from yesterday. Again, this is the case of the Vets Hall, Bruce. Tim Bratton has been a subject of some controversy, and we're going to hear more about that in just a moment. Okay, well, we're here at the Huff meeting on Wednesday, November 23rd. That's a very good tape, but that's not the one I intended to play. So instead, I'm going to play this one. Here we go.
W. Post, and 8 days ago at our United Veterans Council meeting, we meet on the fourth Tuesday of each month, someone asked for permission to let some students use the basement of the building today, on Wednesday.
This is Larry Wilson of the Vets.
Let everyone know that no, it was not available. It's in the basement, and the veterans are using it on Wednesday morning. I was very concerned this morning when those people showed up anyway. It was very much an in-your-face move by Tim Bratton and by the Board of Trustees, and I'm going tomorrow to express my continuing concerns to the Board of Supervisors. Thank you.
Now, let me just ask you this. Since March, there's been a policy in the bunker. You were telling me that groups are being scheduled down there without really the consent of the groups, of the veterans groups, which traditionally have used it as a bunker for veterans' purposes?
The veterans' bunker, the basement of the Veterans Memorial Building, we call the bunker, has been for exclusive veterans' use for 73 years. Most recently, approximately 12 years ago, Judge Black stated that in his court order that the bunker was exclusively for veterans' use. 8 months ago, Pat Clark and the board assigned Tim Bratton the task of, from now on, just go ahead and schedule the basement, the bunker, for civilian use without the knowledge or permission of the American Legion, the Disabled American Veterans, or the VFW. Since that time, the three organizations have voted repeatedly to reinstate exclusive veterans' use, and Pat Clark continues to pretend that the veterans don't want exclusive use, and it's coming to a head.
What's your analysis of what Pat's... have you talked to him about this, or have you got any reports as to what he's saying is happening there?
The only only contact I have with Pat Clark is through the minutes of his board. The 3rd of April, when I found out about the use of the basement by the board for other than veterans, I went to Tim Bratton and said, Tim, I want to speak to your supervisor.
Tim's the manager of the building.
And Tim told me that Pat Clark was coming in and that I could talk to him about my grievance, and I waited 6 hours. I was repeatedly told
Well, he's coming in. He has to. That clerk has to come in to sign checks today. It was very difficult for me to wait and wait and wait. It's very much against my military background to do that in my own veterans building, to be treated that way. But I tried so hard to treat that man with respect. He never had the courtesy of saying, no, I'm not coming down. They just kept leading me on and left me standing there for 6 hours. That was my attempt to go through normal channels directly to Pat Clark. Since then, all my attempts have been through the United Veterans Council, which month after month votes unanimously by the congressionally chartered organizations that we want exclusive veterans use, and Pat Clark still doesn't get it.
What about a return to the courts, since you say the courts have mandated that this is, in fact, for the exclusive use of the veterans?
That's my concern, is that in the heated moment, many of the veterans are saying, let's go back to the courts and take exclusive use of the entire building. I personally think that's more than is appropriate. However, I've got my hotheads all fired up now, and they're going to go for the righteousness that is a veterans building, and it should be used exclusively for veterans. I don't think that's the proper answer at this time. I'm hoping that we can negotiate something with the Board of Supervisors to prevent that, to prevent the lawsuits and going for the entire building. But I don't have control of that.
Now, this has been a controversy over the years, but also kind of there's been a creeping redesignation of how the building is being used. I remember Skidmark Bob of Free Radio expressed some concerns about Director Tim Bratton when he was working under him. Others have praised Bratton as a person who's a fundraiser for the building. What's your sense of the chronology of this? Has there been, was there a time when the Veterans Building was entirely for use by the vets, and slowly that changed? What's been happening?
When the building was dedicated in 1932, it was exclusively used by veterans, or veterans by veterans, from 1932 until approximately 1985. It was around 1985, or perhaps it may have been around the earthquake time, 89. At some point, a decision was made to transfer responsibility for the county-owned Veterans Memorial Building from General Services to Parks, Open Spaces, and Cultural Service. The logic of that was to take the county general fund out from the liability of rewiring the building that was wired with 1920s, 1930s technology and was becoming a fire hazard. They were concerned about red tagging the entire building because it wasn't earthquake proof. And Parks had state money available to it, County Parks, Open Space, and Cultural Service, so the transfer was made from County General Fund, where the Board of Supervisors and their budget directly was related for supporting a veterans building, to County Parks, Open Space, and Cultural Services. Since then, there has been a continuing increase in the use of public, which started off small, and it got bigger and bigger, and now it is pushing the veterans literally out of the building.
Now, playing a devil's advocate here, has veterans' activism diminished, or has veteran participation dropped such that an impartial observer might say, well, the veterans aren't using the building, why can't others use it?
That's a bit of logic that requires some understanding. I want to use as an example Mr. Maurice Ricketts, who's been using room 21 upstairs at the Vets Building for 25 years. And he's been doing it maintaining an emergency veterans radio station. Tim Bratton scheduled groups before, during, and after his time, and then the groups who are right across the hallway from Mr. Ricketts, who's been doing exactly this for 25 years, suddenly getting complaints against Mr. Ricketts that he's making too much noise and being forced out. So having three people complaining, three paying customers complaining about a non-paying veteran, gives the impression that the veterans are doing something inappropriate, and many veterans who are very honorable people cannot handle the dishonor and would rather walk away from a dishonorable situation than express their pent-up hostilities. It's not good for the veterans. If you think back, the reason for the Veterans Building is that veterans have issues that should not be dealt with at the library or other public forums. Veterans have veterans' issues. That's why they create veterans' buildings, for them to get together and do it. It is so inappropriate and wrong to be pushing these veterans out.
Who hired Tim Bratton in the first place?
Now, I don't know who the what the composition of the board was at the time. It was a board. It's the Veterans Memorial Building Board of Trustees, a nonprofit organization that was created by It's currently a nonprofit organization with a contract with Parks, Open Spaces, and Cultural Service. So the county's saying it's not our problem. We contracted the building out to Pat Clark and Timmy Bratton, and pretty much they can do whatever they want. We're trying to get that turned around. I'm going making an emergency visit to the County Board of Supervisors tomorrow. I'm trying to set up some sort of a dialogue to prevent any further escalation.
What can people do who want to be supportive of either you or, for that matter, get information on the subject or possibly support Bratton and his side? How can the public have a say in this either way?
The public can have a say if they feel that the veterans should be in the veterans building by showing up, body count, at noon this coming Monday.
And where should they show?
At the town clock. At the town clock noon, we're going to be disseminating information about the situation and looking for public support. 2 years ago, we ran some tables in front of the Vets Building and drew 2,000 signatures of public support and presented those to the Board of Supervisors when they were trying to kick Mr. Ricketts out 2 years ago. And we're going to be doing something similar to that this Monday at noon at the town clock.
And that will be December 3rd or 4th, something like that?
I have to think about it. I think it would be the 4th. I think that would be December 4th.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, 5th. I think that's December 5th, but I'm not sure of my date, but it's next Monday.
It is Monday. Now, is there a number people can call to get more information if they can't attend?
Not at this time.
Or an email address or a website? Thank you very much. And if people want to leave a message of support, don't know where else to do it, leave it on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'll pass it on to you, Larry. We've been talking with
Larry Wilson, commander of the VFW.
Thanks, Larry.
And that's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I apologize we didn't get to the Fitzmaurice deposition tape, which some of you may be waiting for, but there's a long show on Sunday, and I'm going to be playing lots of these council members, Kennedy, Fitzmaurice, and Crone, who were deposed and taped. And frankly, not all of it is that exciting, but some of it is interesting to hear. And also, of course, I was also deposed, and you get to hear me ranting away if you want to. I think probably the you out there are probably more interested in the former mayors. But the issue, of course, has to do with repression at City Council. I'll be talking more about that on Sunday at 9:30 when I come back. I want to apologize to folks for not making it to the Huff meeting on Wednesday, which is every Wednesday at 8:30 at the county building between the county and the courthouse right outside the metal detector near the coffee cart. And I understand at least one Huff member was there and was quite concerned that I didn't show, and I apologize for not being there. I had these depositions, and I tried to call, but there's no phone contact, and I hoped that an email would have been sent out, but it didn't get sent out either. So, mea culpa, but do show up in the future. Human Rights Organization meets every Saturday at 1:45 at the dining bay of the Homeless Services Center out at 115 Coral Street. You can check that out. That's about it for free radio. I'm still awaiting the arrival of Uncle Dennis from the cream to the dregs, and that's going to happen shortly, I'm assuming. If you want to contact me between shows, you can do so, and particularly if you want to have something broadcast on the show, or you have some commentary, or you have some questions, or just some information you might want to convey. The number is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Old message on the line still, but unfortunately, as the situation is pretty much that things haven't changed, so the message is still there. You might also note, if you're interested, that the Huff website is getting a little better. We've added some new links. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and it's at huffsantacruz.org for those of you who are interested in checking it out. Got some new links, and hopefully we also have some, of course, some old shows. And it looks like an old-timer is arriving in the studio, even as we speak, ready to proceed. So thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Come on back on Sunday, and we'll do some more. Provided every, I can stand it. And I hope you can, too. Uncle Dennis will be able to provide you with a little tranquil music for the next 3 hours. Need, however, is a tape to put on. You got a tape there, Uncle Dennis? You want to throw something in? Give me a disc to put on, and we'll regale them with something ancient from the 60s.
60s? How about the 50s?
All right, let's go back to the 50s. I can accept.
All the way back to the 50s.
We'll see what we can do.
Let's go back to the early days of rock and roll.
Okay, I'll accept that. Maybe you could do a little singing, Dennis. So you're going to add a little sort of personal element to the... Well, in any case, well, Dennis is on. Thanks for being with me.
Staying at home, waiting for you. Just won't get it cause you say we're through. Well, I'm looking for someone to love. I'm looking for someone to love. Well, if you're not here, but baby, I don't care. Cause I'm looking for someone to love. Playing the field all day long. Since I found out I was wrong. Well, I'm looking for someone to love. I'm looking for someone to love. Well, if you're not here, but baby, I don't care. Cause I'm looking for someone to love. Thinking of you, you can't love me and another one too. Well, I'm looking for someone to love. Yeah, I'm looking for someone to love. Well, if you're not here, but baby, I don't care, cause I'm looking for someone to love. Foot slip, there you are. Well, I'm looking for someone to love. I'm looking for someone to love. Well, if you're not here, but baby, I don't care. Cause I'm looking for someone to love. 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 I'm looking for someone to love.
hell a little.